Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Age of Heroes, I'm proud to bring you Champion of Olympus, Bill Waitman. Greetings and welcome, Bill. How are you?
How you doing? How you doing, Hercules? It's been a tough night for us in some ways tonight.
I'm sorry.
We've been trying to get our grandson, and I hope to Governor Cody, Senator Cody now, would have actually had some advice. His son's headed from a bad hospital to a terrible hospital, but I don't want to be that. I don't want to focus on that. I just want to did you see I'm wasting a couple of minutes of your time. Did you see the president of Ukraine speech?
Yes, I did. I saw part of the speech. I didn't see the whole thing. I was at a meeting today, and I had a gig earlier in the morning. So I caught bits and pieces of it on YouTube.
I mean, it was very sad. It's very sad. He's looking for things that he knows are not going to come. And I don't know. To me, when I look at this war, it looks to me like Russia's dictating to the world. And that's... You know, I heard that President Biden, I voted for him. But I think that they should get more. They're getting slaughtered. And it's one of the most humbling speeches I ever saw. I don't know if you saw that, but members of Congress were in tears.
Yes, I saw that.
And it's there's something wrong with our system. I don't know. I don't want to go to a nuclear war with another country. I don't want to go through something... But there's got to be a middle ground to help them beyond what we're doing. I mean, people are being slaughtered left and right. Today they shot a building where they killed a lot of people. There's no reason. It's like extermination. And I don't understand extermination of a people that are basically related to you. I mean, many Russians have family in the Ukraine. Can I tell you a short story?
Sure.
And I hope you... In 1955, my parents bought their first house. I had lived in Fort Lee. I lived in my grandfather's house. He was an Italian. He built the house himself out of rocks and whatever. And from Fort Lee, it was the movie capital, the silent movie capital where I lived. We moved to Richfield. And the first thing we found was a Hungarian family, because the Hungarian War led people to leave and come to the United States and elsewhere. They were no match for the Russians. And you know what? After they moved to our, you know, they had an apartment. They actually raised birds in our cellar. Seeded. You know, they went up the ladder. They started working on cars. And the son, who was maybe 23, 24, he played soccer in Union City. There was a big field for German and other related soccer. And they came out of that pretty good. I'm just talking to ones that come here or go to France or go to Italy or any of the Eastern nations. I'm worried about the Eastern nations out there, that they succeed too. This is a hell of a thing to see every day on your TV. I watch European TV, so I'm seeing the latest things that are going on there, and it's disgusting, and I have friends there. And here's what bothers me. I have a friend from Taiwan. It's a female. She's a female. And he wants the Chinese to invade Taiwan. He's not going to survive. You know, they're going to send hundreds of planes, and they're just going to blow up just like that. But on that note, I should move on off to happier subjects. I have my wife here. She's a school teacher.
Awesome.
Why don't we start again? Hilda? You started in Newark with Patterson. You were the first district. She moved over to Newark. She became the first winner of the state's teachers Governor's Award for teaching excellence. And she taught white, black, Hispanic, and even Chinese kids. And she had a number of strategies. I'm going to put her on because you can hear my voice is terrible tonight, or maybe it sounds like a tenor. Okay. Start saying, tell Hercules a little bit about your experiences.
Hi, Hercules.
Hi, Hildy. How are you doing?
Okay. I taught for 30 years. My first 3 years I did in Patterson and the rest in North. I worked with different ethnicities, different students, different social classes, whatever, you name it, and he was there. As a bilingual teacher, you get all the students that are new in the country. It's not just Spanish students.
Mm-hmm.
You get from other countries. I even got students from the newcomers from Africa into my room. I remember having a kid that the parents introduced to me as the future king of their country. I forget what country it was.
Oh, wow.
It was someplace in Africa. The funny thing was that the parents thought that because the child was going to be supposedly a king in the future when he gets older, they thought that I was going to just, you know, bend over backwards for that child. And that's not how I teach. I treat everybody the same. I teach everybody the same skills. No preference. I run my classroom like a family. I always tell them on the first school because I'm going to spend more time with you. You look at me as your second mom, the student, the boys and girls in the classroom. You are a family. They're like your brothers and sisters now. That's how I run the classroom. So because of that, I was able to have a good rapport with the students. And it didn't matter what social, economic class they came from, they always got along pretty good, and they helped each other out in the playground. So, you know, it was a good atmosphere. I use a method of rewards.
Mm-hmm.
So if you treat the students with respect and you reward their efforts, they eventually are going to want to please you. You know, and they will do anything for you as a teacher, kind of experience that I have with those kids. You could ask me questions now. I'll answer.
No. Speak. You're doing great.
How about your math skills?
I thought Bill was going to interview you.
he didn't tell me anything. I just found out a few minutes ago that I was doing this tonight again. He forgot to tell me.
No.
I could talk to you about my different strategies, though.
Yeah, sure. Talk about your different strategies. Sure. Yeah, I was expecting Bill to interview you, so I didn't prepare any questions.
Let me ask you. Okay, hold on. You started out, right, from my college classroom to the school system. What did you bring to Newark that would win these kids over, get them excited about an education, when many of them didn't see a future?
Use and running the classroom as a family, that has a lot to do with how the kids are going to respond to you. Like I was going to tell you, I use different teaching style techniques, and a lot of them I develop them myself because not every child learns the same way, and not everything is on the curriculum books. So you really have to think of different ways of teaching the same thing to accommodate the different learning styles. I used to, instead of buying the teaching charts, I used to make them myself. And I will use a lot of different color markers. And I guess that was one thing that struck my principal, and he asked me why I use so many colors. So I said to him, if you want the students to internalize what you're teaching them, you have to work with their long-term memory. These kids in Newark, and everywhere now, they are too focused on video games and tablets now, and cell phones, email, so, but mainly a lot of video games. They play a lot of racing games, sometimes violent games on their phones. So you're competing with that. So you have to really find a way to teach them what they need to learn and retain it. So I use my my dry erase board, and I use different color markers. So I will write the problem on the board, and then I will start making, as I'm teaching, I'm making up the rules. And for every rule, I use a different color. So this way, whatever I'm teaching then goes into the long-term memory. And So I do have a problem with them in math. I erase everything that I put there, except for rules, so that to help them recall the information that I just taught them. So I will erase the whole problem, and then I'll write it, and then they have to tell me how to solve the problem by using the rules, you know, to help them recall.
Can I stop you 1 second?
Yeah.
What are the rules in math? What math rules were you using?
It depends on the problem. If we will ignore in fifth grade, you're not going to believe this. Every 2 months, it was a different math skill. Like I taught them the first one in the beginning of the school year, you are doing percentages, fractions, you know, and then the next month or month and a half, the curriculum over there was jumping to algebra, then 2 months later, geometry, then you even do calculus and statistics with those kids. But it was the way that I was teaching them and using the colors, the different colors that helped them retain everything and give it back to me. So if we were doing statistics or finding the mole on a problem, you know, so they had to know how to find that. So I would use, you know, one rule. I would write it. And then the next rule that I made up would be a different color. So once I work out the whole problem, I erase the whole math problem, just with the rules. And then now they see the rules, so they could use it as a guidance to tell me, what do I do in solving the problem? What do I have to do? Do I have to multiply, divide, convert fractions into percentages? You know, whatever it was, depending on the math problem. Do I have to do some calculus to solve this problem? So by having the rules in different colors and then following, put this rule, okay, what did we do to get, you know, to that point? So it's really helped them, you know, retrieve what they just had to learn that I erased from the board. So when I'm solving the problem and they're giving me the rules, it's not just reading the rule. They have to tell me what does that rule means. What do I have to do? What numbers I have to put in there? What operation I'm going to use? You follow what I'm saying? They really have to understand what that rule means. Otherwise, they cannot solve the problem, and they cannot go from one step to the next before they figure out what the rule means that they have to write down, you know, in solving the problem.
I'm going to switch to kids. You had a mixture of kids in your class with different language issues. How did you work on that?
One thing that I did, I never let any student use me as a crutch. So what I will do to accommodate all the different languages in the classroom, the different ethnic groups and all that stuff, I did a lot of drawing in the book. When I saw that they didn't understand what I was talking about, I just, instead of telling them in Spanish or whatever, I would just draw pictures on the board to help them understand what it meant, whatever I was teaching them. And, you know, that helped them develop more vocabulary in their second language. It helped them visualize what I was teaching them, because as they're learning English, they're also looking at what that means. What is that picture? So that it helps them learn faster a second language, believe it or not, because they have that picture there. And like I said, it's going into the long-term memory. With the video game, you know, if you don't do that, you know, they're just going to hear you and nothing is going to be retained. You follow what I'm saying? So you really have to use a lot of colors to keep them focused, to keep them watching the board so that they're not looking to the side, you know. It keeps them focused on what you're doing in the board. It really works.
Now, let me skip something else and we'll come back to this. We've talked about your trips. Now, one principal let you go on a lot of trips.
Oh, yes. I was talking to you about that today. Because my students, even though they hardly knew any English, but my strategies were so effective that they were retelling all the material and scoring high on the different state district tests, as well as, you know, whatever the Board of Education threw at us. They were scoring so high that as I was using the reward method to reward my students, like every time there was a holiday, I would teach them the history of the holiday, and I threw a little party, you know, as a reward. But my principal, I guess, he wanted to reward me. So what he did, he was sending my class to a lot of field trips all over the place. And I was telling Bill that some of the teachers were jealous, but he was rewarding my effort with the kids. And so my students did go into, like, sometimes 10, 15 trips in 1 year because I guess that was the way the principal was rewarding me for what I was doing with the students.
And with math, how did you cross the bridge with different ethnicities?
Like I said, you have the way I taught was hands-on, you know, hands-on. It's not just talking. It's learning the rules and doing what the rules say. So they have to retain and understand what the rule means in order for them to apply it and to put it on paper. We used to have a thing that they developed in Norm. I forgot the name right now because I've been out of the classroom for so long. Whenever we did word problems, we had four square boxes and on the same side, but in the center we have a smaller box. And every square, like in the center, we write the problem, and then every box is how you come up to the solution, the application of solving the problem. So by using that box, the kids knew that, you know, you have to do the first steps, go in the first box. And that helps the kids, no matter what country they came from, it helped them because I was constantly moving in the – I'm not the type that sits in front of the board and talks. That's not me. I cannot teach like that. I just have to move, and I do a lot of body language in the classroom so that the kids are focused. They're so focused that they don't look anywhere. They keep their eyes on me. I move my hands, and I tell them, okay, and now what do we do next? You know, you've got to use that kind of voice to keep motivating them and getting them excited. And I'm telling you, that really works. And it didn't matter if the kids didn't speak the language. They just somehow, they knew how to work those problems because of the strategies that I was using with them. You have to be consistent, you know, and that's a very important thing. You cannot be, you know, doing one thing this way today and then you don't touch it again. No, you continue incorporating more strategies to that. And that's how the kids learn. And how I accommodate the different languages, a lot of love. You have to show those kids that you care, that I will tell them, you're not competing with just the kids in this classroom. You're not competing with all the fifth grade in the building. I will let them know you are competing with all the kids. That's the school in the district up north, in the state, and globally, in the country and globally. And they kind of understood what I meant. And one thing in the beginning of the school year, I used to get a lot of African-American students that would say to me, "Oh, Miss Wayman, I hate math and science. I don't like those subjects." And I remember I was telling Bill that I used to tell them, "Oh, no, I'll give you a month and you're going to tell me different." And they would say, "Oh, no, Miss Wayman, I don't like science. I don't like math." But guess what? Even just a little bit before the month was completed, those kids, I did everything hands-on. That's how I motivated it. If there wasn't something to make it hands-on, I would make it up. I would find a way to accommodate those different children because they don't have the language. So you have to really engage them and do whatever you think that is going to help them assimilate and retain it. And that's what I used to do. So I divide the kids in like little groups of 3, 4, you know, because I was doing just science and math when I did fifth grade. Sometimes I had class that had it like 30-something kids, you know, 36, 38, you know. So sometimes depending on the size of the group that was coming to me after a certain period, I would only have 5 groups of 6 or 7 groups of 5. You follow what I'm saying? And it helps them because they learn to work together as a group, and they knew they were responsible for their group because they were competing with the other group in the classroom. So I would put newsprint paper on the floor, and then I had those kids, if I'm doing science, they had to do a sketch. One kid would lay down on the blueprint, and the other kids are drawing him around, you know, doing the outline of the body. Then that kid gets up, and now they have to do all the organs of the body in that drawing, and then they have to be ready to come to the front and explain it. They have to label and explain, you know, how your body works with that certain organ. So and I did a lot of stuff like that. And with math, like I said, I would make it up. I would create the activity so that they're all engaged. And they thought they were playing games many times, but they were really learning and retaining it because of my teaching style, so, which is very important to do with kids that speak different languages and come from different socioeconomic backgrounds. It's important to make sure you engage them all, that you gain the respect and they give you that respect that you are giving them and that love for learning. They assimilate that. They get it, you know. They really do. And they learn to love the teacher because of that.
Now, let me ask you a question that goes to the playground. How did you get all these kids of different backgrounds to assimilate and get along with each other?
We were a family. I was the second mom and their brothers and sisters, and I told them, if one of the students is in trouble, you just don't stay there and watch. You go and help them out. There is a conflict. You find out what's going on, and you talk it over, and you help them. You don't let them, you know, be on their own and be bullied by other kids. No. They, I'm telling you, they were like a family, and they treated each other like a family. And even many, many times during my lunch period, I was never alone because those kids wanted to be with me all the time. And any little thing that happened in the playground, they would come running and let me know. So we were really a family, you know, and that's important in the school district that you are to make sure that the kids learn to respect each other. As well as the classroom rules and the teachers, the adults, you know, it's important.
Now, you used, in this session, you talked about art and things like that. How did art relate to the plan? Did you hook it into other subjects?
Oh, yeah. Well, Hercules, you know that Bill was running the department, excuse me, the department of labor, and you remember he has a computer lab. So after school, because I know that he always stay longer at the office, I will go to his office and I will use 5-6 computers at the same time and look at the different subjects, and I will make everything correlate and match the course, the state course standards, and then telling you, I was using 5-6 computers at the same time and making the copies for the kids and giving them the information. Those children learn to speak in front of a group and give feedback. Because not only did I teach science and math, there was 1 or 2 years in fifth grade that I had to do all the subjects. So you could imagine how much work it is for somebody like me that doesn't use the same lesson plans every year. I redo everything. I never use the same plans. I was always, you know, creating new materials, new strategies, new activities, you name it. And I did it all. So it was fun, but it was a lot of work. And, I created all those things. Even the assembly program that we had to put a show on the stage, I would write the whole program, the whole thing. I would write the drama, the poems. I would make up the song, put the music, you name it. I did all that stuff. And another thing that I did to make the kids learn songs and memorize things, I used a lot of sign language. And that's something that really the kids love. They really love sign language. So they learn to do sign language. And I'm telling you, there is nothing better than that. When you have children that don't speak English, you help them memorize things, you use sign language, and they pick it up fast. We had the decorations for the stage. I will do all the scenery. I have the kids color it and cut it. I mean, it's a lot of work. Teaching, when you are committed to it, when you really have the best interest of your students in mind, believe me, you never have free time. You don't even have a day of the weekend free. I was constantly working 7 days a week. I would go to bed, and sometimes at 1, 2 in the morning, I was, I'm sure Bill remembers, I was singing songs because I was making things songs up to help them memorize song information that they needed to know. it's a lot of work when they're committed. He tells me, why don't you go back to teaching? I have to remind you, do you remember what it was? I don't have a weekend. You'll be alone. Do you remember? Is that what you want? So it's a lot of work when you're committed.
When I had to go to Trent when she was singing, Hercules. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. And that's 103 miles from Sussex County.
Wow.
Songs in my head. And,
because I used to sing them in bed, I would say to him, okay, honey, do you like the melody that I'm putting? I have to make it catchy so that the kids will love it. Because if you think that way, Hercules, I'm telling you, the kids learn it faster. If they like the tune, I'm telling you, they'll pick it up. I had those kids learning songs that I wrote in different languages because there was an assembly that I did where they learned songs in French. It might have been the bilingual month, and I had those kids sing in Italian, French, Spanish, and English. And then you could sign them, to make it more fun for them and for them to retain it and remember. You know, sign language, it really helps them to remember the words. It works, I'm telling you, it really works.
And most of these kids did not have linguistic problems, did they?
Oh, yeah, they didn't. They hardly spoke English. They did have. Oh, one thing that I used to do with the Spanish children, they don't hear the difference between CH and SH. So because I'm aware of the different problems that they have, and if I'm teaching a lower grade, when the state test comes, they just say words, and they have to find those words with kindergarten first grade. And I will teach them the position of the mouth and the lips, and that's how they knew the difference between SH, CH, TH, SCH, and I knew all the tricks. Yeah. I guess speaking different languages, it helps you become more aware of the different linguistic, you know, theories and abilities, I guess. So, yes. So my students, I would tell them, okay, and if it didn't matter if I was administering the test or somebody else, just the fact that they knew the position of the mouth, I would tell them, you look at their mouth, see the position for CH, SH, TH. I will teach them how you run the mouth for this sound. You produce this sound with the tongue on your upper teeth. I'm telling you, I taught them that. And when they have other people come, because sometimes you know they do that, especially with me because the kids were scoring so high, I don't know if they thought that something funny was going on in the classroom, but no. So I will administer the test to other classes, and they will rotate the teacher. Sometimes you didn't have your own classroom, but because the kids knew the position of the mouth, it didn't matter who did the test. They knew the sounds, how to produce it, or how to find the words because of the position of your teeth. How you round your mouth. You open your mouth for this sound. You know. Yeah, it works.
Let me ask you a question about something that resulted in an accident. And who is waiting for you at the school?
Oh, okay. You're talking about Shapiro, right? When I had the car accident by the truck
issue? Congressman. Cory Booker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what is it that you want me to...
I'll tell the story about that. They came to pick you up.
That's the car accident. The state was coming to the building, and my principal... I don't know what he thought. Anyway, when the display monitoring thing comes, it's about between 20 and 30 people that come. So they divide themselves in two and three people per classroom because, you know, they try to cover the whole building in 1 week. So, My principal, I knew that he was going to send people to my classroom. So I was driving to school. I wanted to be really early because, you know, I like to get my boards ready before the kids come. I like to have all the materials, you know, ready to begin. I'm not the type that sits in a desk, drink coffee, I greet them on the door, I have them all in, and we begin teaching right away. They begin learning. So a truck happened to hit me right on Route 3. So I didn't go home because I knew that the state was going to be in the building. So I told the principal, if you send a teacher, Mr. Henry, he was from Africa, but he was very nice. I have a good relationship with him. So I said to him, ask Mr. Henry to come pick me up and I'll be in the school. Because, you know, my car got destroyed, so how was I going to get there? So he did. So guess what? So
what?
I'm in my class teaching, and all of a sudden, I didn't get two people in my classroom. I got the whole state monitoring thing in my classroom with nobody.
Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, those people, they write the good and the bad, you know, so they all have notepads. So I said to myself, I'm going to be nervous. I'm just going to maybe let that be. I'm not here, and I'm just going to teach the way I am. I'm going to move to keep the kids focused, to keep them, you know, giving them the information, to make sure that the kids are raising their hands and answering. The end of the visit, I went to the, you know, during my lunch, I guess, I went to the principal's office and I asked her, how did it go? He didn't want it to tell me. You know why? Because the same monitoring team told him, that's the best teacher you have in the classroom, in the building. Yeah, so then the vice principal from Mr. Brahma, actually was he Nigerian? One of those countries in Africa. So he came to me with a big smile and he said, Miss Wayman, from now on, anyone that comes into the building, I'm going to bring them to your room so that they can. Yeah. So it was an experience that, you know, I didn't do anything different. That's just the way I teach, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't teach standing like a statue. I move, you know, and I move my hands in motion, and I tell them, okay, and what do you think? And then I move to the other side, and then I pick on a different student, and what do you think about what he said? You follow? So I get them all engaged, and because they don't know who I'm going to be asking for questions, they really have to be paying attention because they don't know when I'm going to pick. I really
don't. It sounds like you're really passionate about teaching. That's great.
Yes, I am. And I would like to teach, but not full-time, because then I know that I'm not going to have no free time. I know myself, you know. I'm so overcommitted because I understand how important it is. When you have a student, their life is in your hand, their future, you know.
Right.
So who wants those kids to make it, you know? And they're competing with the Anglo-Saxon and with all the Chinese students, Japanese students, Afro-Americans, different kinds of ethnic-speaking groups, and that's how I talk to them. You're not just competing with the kids in this room. You're competing with everybody to make it in this country, and they understood that. They really knew what I meant. So it was great. I do love teaching. I don't mind teaching part-time, 2 or 3 hours, you know, or 2 or 3 days a week, no more than that, because I felt like I was a slave to the profession because I was too committed to worry about, you know, Fulanita didn't get it this way, that one didn't get it that way. What can I do? I would go, on what strategies do I need to develop to make sure that the kids that didn't get it a certain way will get it a different way? That's how I was. So, and it didn't matter if I went to bed at 12, 1, 2 in the morning. I had to get up at 5, you know, because I'm commuting from Sussex County to Newark. And those commutes are really crazy. And during winter time, it's even worse, you know, because of the snow. We get more snow than Newark. And lots of times, they don't even have a sign of snow. Many times I went to school with the car full of 2 feet of snow on top of the car, and the kids were say to me, Miss Wayman, where do you come from? And I said, even one May. And I went to school with over 2 feet of snow on top of the car, and they couldn't believe it, you know? They couldn't believe it, not even the teachers.
Excuse me, Doctor, cut in on this a bit. I was in Nevada. The federal government sent me for training in California, Northern California, but I went to Nevada, Lake Tahoe, I guess it is, and there was no snow there. They were hoping to have snow. That day that she went to school, Sussex County got 15 inches of snow. The only place in Jersey. She had my pickup truck.
A little Subaru pickup.
Yeah, a little Subaru. They had a Subaru used to have seats in the back of their little cars. Mm-hmm. But she drove down and they couldn't believe it. But that's the fact of life. It's a different area, which is changing dramatically because a lot of New Yorkers are moving up. What about that?
And you know what? Now that he's talking about that, my principal knew that I lived the farthest of all the teachers in the building, and I was the first one to be in school on time. A lot of those people that live 2, 3, 5 minutes away, they were late. So they knew. I guess that's why I was rewarded, because they saw all the stuff that I was doing for the student. I was really committed. That's a profession that you cannot take for granted.
No.
Do you still, oh, go ahead, Hercules. Do you still hear from any of your students?
Oh, yeah. I have students that I taught in first grade, and some of them were looking for me. So I wasn't in Facebook until, when did I join Facebook? It was less than 10 years, actually. And one student that I had in first grade, she tracked me down through Facebook. She told me that she was looking everywhere for me. She moved to Puerto Rico when she was like 8 years old. But just the impact that I did on that little girl in first grade when I had her, she told me that she became a teacher because of me.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That is so great.
I'm sorry?
That is such a great thing. You built a legacy.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice when you hear that. Then I have other kids that I taught also in first grade and second grade. The parents brought them to my classroom when they were in college. And those kids were honor students in college. And the parents came with them to thank me for what I did. They knew. But that was the thing with me. I knew that in order for those kids to make it, I had to teach them to love school. I didn't want them to be dropouts when they are in you know, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, you know, because a lot of the kids, they get so discouraged, and that's what happened. They just drop out of school. So that's why I run my classroom like a family, because I wanted them to love school, you know, so that they would make it. Because if they hate the school when they are in kindergarten and first grade, if they have bad experiences, you lost them. They're not going to stick up with school. They're going to be dropped out. So I was so aware, and I was always making sure that they learn to love school. And you know, one thing about the end of the school year, that a lot of the parents, they kind of keep the little ones in school because, you know, the teacher is coming to school to do book inventory, to, you know, clean the classroom. I don't know why, you know, the school makes those kids come. And guess what? Those children came just to be with me during inventory. You know, I mean, they're required to be there. But a lot of parents, they ask if they could keep them. When you have kindergarten, some of them tell you, can I? So I will tell them, okay, but don't tell anybody. Because I knew, you know, I didn't have this time for them. I thought it was a crime to have those poor babies in the classroom when you are cleaning shirts, packing books in boxes, and everything, you know, at the end of the school year, everything is such rush. And then a lot of meetings, it's kind of ridiculous that the kids have to come to school to do nothing, you know?
Right.
That's the backside. You've had kids that came from bad homes. They threatened suicide and everything else.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Tell the audience, Hercules, about that.
I have.
And how the administrators didn't want to cooperate.
A second grade student, a baby, you know? Second grade, you are 7 years old.
Right.
And that this baby, he has such a bad life at home. Some of the kids, I didn't know that. My students that live by him, they told me that they saw the parents kick the boy on the street, you know, practically abused. So this poor boy came to school and he had it with life that he tried to jump out the window. In Newark, some of the buildings, they have high ceilings. I mean, you know, it's, how many feet do you think that was?
50, maybe.
No, the high ceiling from the floor to the ceiling in the classroom.
Oh, 14 feet, maybe.
Something like that or more, because my classroom was, you know. So So if you are on the second floor, you are really way from the ground. So I just knew that this poor baby, he was going to do that, go to the window and jump out. I just somehow predicted his behavior. So I didn't want to scare him. I didn't want him to see me going after him. So I turned the lights in the classroom off, and I calmed the kids. This happened during dismissal time. It was like 10 minutes before the bell rings for the children to be walked out of the classroom into the hall, you know, where they the parents picked me up.
Mm-hmm.
So this little boy was running towards the window, and I didn't want him to know that I was going to grab him. So I'm talking to the kids, I'm walking softly. So he didn't even suspect that I was going to grab him. And so I came, as soon as I came near him, I just grabbed him and didn't let him go. And then I called the main office, right? And the one that answered the phone was one of the vice principals, telling her the situation on the intercom of what's going on in the classroom. I couldn't believe it. The woman did not react quick enough. She took her sweet time to come upstairs, and then when she comes, she's telling me, why are the lights off? You know, I'm having a situation that a child wants to kill himself, and I need to call the whole classroom that knows what's going on with the boy and prevent mm-hmm. him from coming, you know, from jumping out the window. And that's what she said. This now, this is a time, yes, it's 5 more minutes. Mm-hmm. Why are the lights out? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm telling the woman, don't you get it? I told you that he wanted to kill himself. He wanted to jump out. But the woman, I'm telling you, all she wanted to do was to leave the building and go home, you know, continue with her life like nothing happened. She wanted to sweep it up the front. So I dismissed the class, but I never let go of the boy's hand. So I'm in the main office waiting for somebody to come and, you know, and get the kid. So I see no action. So I told the principal, you know, he tried to commit himself to kill himself. He tried to jump out the window. You're supposed to call the hospital. You're supposed to come and take him to the hospital and, you know, keep him in the hospital for at least 2 weeks for an evaluation to figure out what's going on. The principal didn't want to do that, telling, you know, that person, I wasn't going to leave until, you know, she did the right thing.
Uh-huh.
They are staying in the building waiting for his family to come and for the principal to call the hospital. You know, sometimes these principals, they don't really care. They don't care about the students. But the vice principal, the one that came into my room, I couldn't believe it. She went home right away. She didn't do anything. So.
Don't tell them about it. Your students that came up to Sussex County.
Oh.
For swimming.
Well, when the school year was almost over, you know, during the time that I'm cleaning the room and a lot of children, they love to stay with the teacher. You know, they really like you. I'm telling you, they do anything for you. So as much as I wanted to have at least half the class so that I could work faster and packing the room and all that, they all came to school every single day. They were never out.
Wow.
So it was almost, you know, the last 2 or 3 days of school, and the kids wanted to come to my house. So I just, you know, I didn't mind. I told the parents, you know, would you mind if I take them to my house for the weekend? I did, and guess what? Those kids didn't want to come home. They didn't want to go home again. And those children, and I have Afro-American kids that came to my car, to my house, and stay overnight for the weekend. And they didn't want to go back home. So, you know, it's important. how you treat the kids, because, you know, you're impacting the teachers. And what you do with them when they're little is going to decide what kind of individuals they're going to become.
It was an interesting tour doing. I would be waiting outside sometimes with a car, Hercules. I wanted to go to the foreign policy meetings in New York, and I missed a number of them because she was at school till 8, 9 o'clock. I needed to get to New York. You know?
And you know what? Another thing, Hercules, that I had to do was that after school, when the parents came to pick up their kids, some of them don't even have any schooling or very limited schooling. And I wound up teaching a lot of those parents math on my classroom board so that I could go home and help the kids. I did that for free. I didn't mind because I knew that the kids' future was in my hands. And, you know, I knew how important it was for those kids to learn those skills and to love school and be successful. And I'm glad I did that. I didn't get paid many times for that, but I didn't mind. I didn't mind doing it.
It was a new experience for them. They got out.
Yeah, that kept the kids, away from the street, because some of those children, their mothers were prostitutes, you know. Some of the parents were drug dealers, so they were never home for them.
It's a tough section of that city. It's near near a police station, but it's right on the Belleville border. It's a little bit past Belleville, and a lot of people, a lot of immigrants are coming in, Africa, Europe. I mean, she had some Italian kids in that in various classes.
It's amazing, Hercules, that those children living under those horrific conditions at home, which sometimes they didn't have nobody waiting for them after school, and those children, they assimilated what I was teaching them. Now that I think back, I say, wow, those children really, really wanted to please me, because they went home and did their work, and they did okay, in the state test. And it is amazing when you think back and you say, wow, those children with all that baggage, hanging on them, and they really took the time to make sure that their schoolwork, that they did it on their own, and they made sure to learn it. And some children that didn't get it, I would stay after school in the classroom, and I would tutor them for free to make sure that they got it. And, that helped them. Any little thing that you could do for those poor children, it works, and they appreciate it. They really appreciate it, and you are really changing their lives for the best.
And when do you know that you wanted to be a teacher? How young were you before you got your calling?
Can you repeat that? Because it's too low.
Your calling was to be a teacher.
Oh, that's funny that you're asking me that. Guess what?
What?
I went to college to become a clinical psychologist, and that's what I studied, and sociology. And then after I had my first child, I just started teaching a baby. He wasn't even 6 months old, and I was creating, making little games to teaching ABC and spelling, but I would do like three letter words, And I saw that my son was responding and learning, that I said, oh my God, I should have became a teacher, because I was having fun and he learned. So I went back to school to become a teacher, and I'm glad I did.
Wow, it is so great that you knew what you wanted to do that early, and the fact that you had many years of doing it, and that you found your calling. Definitely, you're very dedicated. You affected a lot of lives, and you made a difference in the world. That must be very satisfying.
What was the last thing that you said?
That
would be. Oh yes, it was very satisfying. What I would like to do is write a book about teaching strategy to help students. That's one thing that I have in my heart to do, you know, writing a book that teaches different methods that they don't use in the classroom to help children with different, that come with different languages, different socioeconomic backgrounds, you know, that come with a lot of baggage from the house. And you know, a lot of kids, you know, they're in the classroom, but their mind, their thinking is so far away from the classroom because they're just thinking about the problems that they're having at home. And you have to work with those children and figure out how to get them to stay on focus, you know. It takes a lot, you know. It takes a lot from a person to really, you know, see that in a child and you know, pull them from that little world that they are, you know, thinking about when they're in the classroom. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, you have to do so many different things to really get them together, you know. So that
Are you doing any teaching now?
The last teaching that I did was last year when I was living with my daughter. I was teaching the baby. I started teaching her since she was like
one,
like two.
Wow.
I was teaching my granddaughter to be toilet training, you know, potty training. So
right.
I would sit in a potty chair and I would read to her. And then, you know, when kids are little, they don't talk, but their little brains are like sponges and they're
very
really
active, yes,
soaking in everything that you're teaching them. So I would read stories and I was teaching her the elements of reading and comparisons, you know, spelling and, you know, colors and you name it. And
so,
that baby is 4 now. And
so
she reads. She reads.
Oh, good.
She spoke. I mean, she's a tiny little peanut, but her brain is big. She knows a lot.
We're going to have to wrap up because we only have a minute left in the hour. But I want, you know, Bill to invite you back on. We'll get a part two for this interview. I'll be prepared next time. And we will also, as you work on your book, come on and let us know how your book is doing. Okay,
I will.
Thank you. We'll get back to this topic. I'm focusing on probably next. The principle of Dwight Morrow in Englewood. It's
okay, awesome.
It's a good school. It's a lot of white people left, but I looked at the numbers today, and they're back. So that's pretty good. I really like that. That we'll go on and on and on and see if we can build something on this.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much, Bill and Hildy. It was awesome connecting with both of you. I'm looking forward to our connecting in person as soon as we can. And have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you for this time.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thank you, everybody. And good night, Hildy. Good night, Bill.
Good night
to you, Hercules. Okay, we got it all.